CliffCentral.com.
It is Monday morning, CliffCentral.com. Let us know what you are up to today. We've got Leanne Moll and me to keep you company on this Monday. We've changed up the lineup a little bit. We can have different people on different days on CliffCentral.com. And, you know, the show's always evolving, so we're always finding new things to bring to you. And we've got some news headlines on the way. We've also got Markets Mondays still to come. Dr. Hanan making a lot of sense this morning when it comes to cheating. You know, something that a lot of people are thinking about, a lot of people are dealing with. It's not so rare these days. You know, you hear about people. Why, how, when, what exactly goes down? Gina sent this email about like walking in on her boyfriend or husband cheating. I mean, it's just walking in flagrante delicto. That's what they used to call it in law. It's like it's got to hurt so much more when you actually see two people having sex and you're like,
yeah, oh, it does. But I think as well, it was a thought that sometimes you imagine things to be a whole lot different. But I don't know. That's just taking it a bit far.
What do you mean?
Really, actual, in your face?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You mean the actual?
Yeah. So sometimes you
stumping in front of you.
Yeah. Sometimes you know, you'll often find a person who's been cheated on saying, tell me how many times you slept with this person.
Yeah.
What was it like? What was the setting? Because once you've had some clarification on that, you stop imagining the absolute worst. But I think she was just confronted with the absolute worst. Oof.
And then is it better to like make it seem less romantic or make it seem less sexual, or you know, do you play it down because you now don't want to create extra trauma for this person? There's so much dishonesty in all of this. It's crazy. All right. So a few things we need to get to this morning, including the headlines. Let's take a look at some of the big stories for this morning. We mentioned this at the start of the show, but stage 5 power cuts have been scheduled from Monday to Wednesday. Stage 4 rolling blackouts will be implemented from 5 p.m. on Sunday. Eskom says stage 4 will continue until 4 p.m. Monday. Stage 5 will then be implemented between 5 p.m. and midnight, Monday to Wednesday. Varying stages will be experienced during the day. The embattled power utility has blamed a large number of breakdowns and depleted emergency generation reserves for the continued rolling blackouts. Yeah, I'm going to ask what I asked at the beginning of the show. How is it that you can go from, oh no, we've suspended load shedding, to, oh, we're suddenly on stage 5? There's obviously something going on here that's very suspicious and very, very dodgy. I don't think that Eskom are being completely honest with us. And I don't think a lot of people trust them. So it's not just me. Anything you want to add to that?
I think in the beginning, I used to think, you know, they were being dishonest, but I think that they were pushed to a point where they had to be so honest that we now get like in-depth updates. So I feel like the more in-depth it is, the less they're lying.
Well, I don't know. I don't trust them. I don't like giving them money. It just drives me up the wall that some really useless group of people like this, and don't tell me that, you know, there are people trying to sort it out, because they would have done something by now. All of this sounds to me to be like immediate problems, not problems that have developed over 15 years. These are all like sabotage or whatever. So I'm just, I don't know who to believe. I really don't.
Well, okay. There's now a loan that runs into the billions. Mm-hmm. So let's see what's done with it, where the money goes.
I don't know if you heard this story from News24 about Ama piano producer DJ Somebody, who was allegedly killed in a hail of bullets. I saw a couple of tributes to DJ Somebody on social media over the weekend. But apparently, he's passed away. The hitmaker, given the name Opa John Sefoka, died in a hail of bullets in the early hours of Sunday morning in Joburg. His family confirmed the news of his passing. I mean, in a hail of bullets? They said details could not be disclosed as they were part of an investigation which was underway. He broke into the industry with his hit track Munati, featuring musician Casper Nyovest. He was on his way from a performance in Woodmead in Johannesburg. He was due to perform at the all-white Veuve Clicquot picnic on Sunday. In a statement, his family said they've requested privacy during this difficult time. Messages of support continued to pour in on social media. Deleuze wrote, always keep it 100. rest in peace, Somebody. Mom Shengu wrote, I still can't believe that DJ Somebody's passed away. This one was so humble. You wouldn't believe he was a multimillionaire. These kinds of things, when they happen, make me think, you know, sometimes being successful has unforeseen consequences too, because then suddenly you've got a target on your back in certain places and with certain people, right? You know, you got money. I didn't know. I'll be honest with you. I didn't know who DJ Somebody was. That's him. Put up a picture of him now.
Yeah.
I didn't know who he was. I don't know. I might have met him once or twice. I have no recollection whatsoever. I'm not a big Ama Piano guy, so I'm not entirely sure what's going on there. But clearly, yeah, made a lot of money. And then, you know, when you make a lot of money in certain places and with a certain group of people, they're like, that guy's too big for his boots. Or they just get jealous and they want a piece of the action. But to die in a hail of bullets, that's definitely an assassination then. It wouldn't have been by mistake.
Wow.
Crazy.
Yeah. Huh?
What do you think? It's totally insane.
No, it's, yeah.
Then
stuff you find in movies.
Yeah. Then a big story from CNN Business, which really dominated the headlines over the weekend. Elon Musk has restored Donald Trump's Twitter account. So the account, which Twitter banned following January 6th, 2021, and the attack on the Capitol, was restored after Twitter CEO and new owner Elon Musk posted a poll on Friday night asking the platform's users if Trump should be reinstated. The people have spoken. Trump will be reinstated, he said. Vox populi, vox Dei. Latin for the voice of the people is the voice of God. The final poll,
I think it was only about 56%, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was 51.8% in favor.
51.
48.2% opposed. So really nail-biting, like all the American elections, right? Everything in America seems to be on a knife edge. Like, people can't even agree on basic stuff, like should this guy have a Twitter account? The poll included 15 million votes. 15 million votes. That's got to be a record for any Twitter poll, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. But the thing is that Trump's turned around and said no thanks to the offer.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. You want to hear what he said? Listen to this. Here's Trump.
Yeah.
Okay. Because we haven't heard from him for a while. So it's in your own words. Sorry, there's an ad. I have to get rid of an ad first because, you know, you can't go to any site anymore with some bullshit ad playing before you can actually get to the content that you're looking for. I hate this stuff so much. And it's all to, like, go and visit Korea, which is not interesting.
Last night about whether or not he would even be interested in coming back to Twitter.
Truth Social is through the roof. It's doing phenomenally well. Truth Social has been very, very powerful, very, very strong. And I'll be staying there, but I hear we're getting a big vote to also go back on Twitter. I don't see it because I don't see any reason for it.
So what do you think? What do you think of that? Can't hear you, Leanne. Hang on.
It's way bigger.
Sorry. Let me just kill this. There we go. Sorry, I had you down. Go on.
It was muted a little bit halfway through. But I don't believe a word he says. I mean, I've never been on Truth Social and I haven't looked at the stats. Mm-hmm. But would you believe that it's through the roof? It's doing amazingly.
Yeah.
Oh, just hearing his voice again makes me angry.
Yeah, it's kind of, I don't know. I mean, I just think this whole thing has been, it's become so bad now that you can't have a regular conversation about Trump anymore with anyone, whether they're a big fan or they're a big enemy of his. It's just become impossible to have reasonable, rational conversations with people about this stuff. Matthew says Trump is awesome. Tracy says, shame he finally won something. I don't enjoy Trump, to be honest, but I enjoy the public freakout. Well, okay, this is the big story, in my opinion, is that so many people have just lost their minds about the fact that he's coming back to Twitter. There are a bunch of people who are just screaming in the streets, pounding their fists, having temper tantrums, falling on the ground. It's how can you be so afraid? Or how can you be so upset by one guy having the ability to express himself? That's properly wild, right?
To express himself, that's fine. But to run for president again is an issue.
Well, you can't stop someone from running for president either. madness. Well, anyway, look at this.
I'm glad I don't have to.
So he's apparently come out, Trump now, and said he had no interest in returning to Twitter, even as a slim majority voted in favor of reinstating him. He was banned from social media for inciting violence in a poll organized by new owner Elon Musk. He won with 51.8% being reinstated. His Twitter account, which had over 88 million followers before he was banned, began accumulating followers, had nearly 100,000 new ones by 10 p.m. on Saturday. Some users initially reported being unable to follow him. Trump had appeared less than keen earlier in the day. He said, "I don't see any reason for it," because he prefers his, you know, Truth Social, which, again, I've never downloaded that either.
No, apparently it's only available in the U.S. We've got someone commenting on that. Mm-hmm. But also, it made me think, if anyone was to make a social platform popular, it would be someone who's like Trump, and has a huge Twitter following. Sure. And so it's probably all of his type of people who've gone over and are following him there. So obviously he sees it as a success because he's being supported in everything that he says.
Well, that's what we've got on Trump and Elon. But I mean, there are lots of people who've suddenly been restored on Twitter, and good. The antidote to horrible speech is more speech, not less. Nobody wins if you ban people. And I don't see this as a, you know, both sides argument. The one side actually just doesn't want the other side to have a say at all. And that's no way to proceed in a society, in a civilization. Unisex toilets at school will help prevent the bullying of gender diverse pupils, says the education department. Now, what do we think of this? This is hugely controversial. The abuse of gender diverse pupils motivated the proposal for unisex toilets at school, says the Department of Basic Education. Spokesperson Elijah Mtlanga told News 24, incidents of abuse and bullying of gender diverse pupils made it clear that the constitution of the department's policies were insufficient to prevent the violation of their rights. So first of all, how many gender diverse students do we have in South Africa? Because if this was America, it would be a vanishingly small number. It would be, you know, a percentage of a percentage point. And yet we are overhauling all kinds of practices in order to accommodate these people. Are they not also worried that this is going to make a bunch of non-gender diverse people behave badly in unisex toilets? I mean, kids, we know what kids are like, right? We know why that there's a good reason why boys and girls have separate locker rooms. We know that. We know there's a good reason why girls' bathrooms are one of the few safe places that girls can go to at school or at varsity or wherever else. If we take that away in the name of a handful, because it is only a handful of gender diverse pupils, aren't we putting all those girls at risk?
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I remember chatting to my cousin who is a surgeon, a pediatric surgeon, who deals a lot with children who are born with either both genitalia or none at all, or what some part of it is, you know, hidden, and has to do these reassignment surgeries. And it is actually more common than you would think. It's particularly in Africa that this occurs. So I think there's definitely a need for them. And I don't think we should jump to the conclusion that all of these cases are done through choice. There are a lot of kids who are born with both genes.
It's a tiny, tiny, so, tiny, tiny number, Leanne, even though we have more than, you know, you say it's not as rare as people think. It's still rare. It's very rare. Most kids are pretty much at birth, you can tell what they are. There are a couple of cases, but let's not use the fringe cases to make policy. I mean, that's like saying, well, we've got to develop a new way of doing exams because there might be a few people who are born with six fingers. You know, and there are people born with six fingers. It doesn't mean we've got to change the way human beings write. You understand? So I'm sympathetic to those people, but why don't we just create different rules, as in there's one bathroom in the school that is just for the gender diverse people? Because every school is going to have a couple of bathrooms. There can be one that is just for people who are, inverted commas, gender diverse, whatever the hell that means. And then for the rest of them, why mess up a policy that is actually keeping girls and boys safe from each other rather than what could happen if you just put them all in unisex bathrooms. Is this really the solution that we need? I wonder how many girls would go with that. How many young girls would feel safe?
As a teacher, if some kid approached me and said, I have this issue and I'm being bullied every time I go to the toilet, I'm sorry, then I would help them.
Yeah, but you'd let them use like the staff bathroom or something.
The staff toilets or something like that.
Yeah.
That, you know, that's still pointing, it's still like highlighting the fact that they're using it, the staff bathroom, but it kind of points a finger again. Ugh, I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm just glad I don't have to make these decisions.
I'm with Carl here. He says, I have a 6-year-old daughter. I don't want her in the same bathroom as a bunch of penises. This is fucking ridiculous. Shoot all the woke people. Okay, again, violence, guys. Let's not choose violence first thing in the morning. Some boys should not be allowed in the same room as girls wanting some privacy in the bathroom or toilet. If they become unisex, can't these boys then cause shit? Well, that's the problem, right? You can only be responsible. Like, let's say you're a parent. You can only partially be responsible for your own child. And if you've got a little girl and you entrust her to the care of the school for those 4, 5, 6 hours a day, and she goes to the bathroom thinking like she'll be left alone when she pees, but there's a bunch of guys in the bathroom too, I don't know that that's a good idea. I remember what we were like at school. I remember what guys are like generally. The girls' bathroom is the one sacred place where a girl could go and cry or do all the usual things that happen in a bathroom. No,
do
really.
All the girl stuff, Gareth.
No. Like, I mean, like
crying and changing tampons.
I'm not being horrible here. I think, like, honestly,
I know what you mean.
You take
but they'll
away,
still have their bathroom. You know.
Well, they won't. It'll be unisex, according to this. This is the solution: is to create.
No, I don't think so. I think it's to have the addition of a unisex bathroom. Well, no, I don't think it's just unisex bathrooms. Definitely not. Wouldn't be.
Well, you never know with our Department of Basic Education. Are you kidding?
No. Well, I mean, some schools don't even have toilets. They'd be lucky to have one, and that one will be unisex by default.
I just don't know why we have to always take these fringe situations and cases and build policy based on them. I mean, really, you know, people are talking in this article. They talk about the sexual diversity related to identity, some of which were represented in the spectrum, while gender diversity is how people identify outside of he or she. The analogy of transgender people is used to explain this. Trans people tell those around them what they identify as. It's not about what you see, but what the person identifies as. You may see a male or a female, but the person may tell you that they are the opposite gender. Adding that the corrective surgery does not validate one's identity as a trans person, the others resort to. You see, again, if the only thing that determines your gender is how you're feeling at a specific time, if that is the way that we determine what gender you are, then the only person who can ever know what gender you are at a given time is you. And then it becomes everyone else's responsibility to have to ask, what gender are you today, Sam? And then Sam goes, I feel like a boy today. Or Sam goes, I feel like a girl today. And you have to play along with this person's mental illness. I just don't see it as a sensible course of action. I really don't. There has to be an objective way. Otherwise, words mean nothing. Otherwise, what is a woman? What is a man? What's the point? If you can just make it up in your head, today I feel, you know, I feel like a woman today. I could do that as a guy. And then I'm really just making fun of what the whole term woman is.
It's not a day-to-day thing, though.
Oh, with some people it is.
Yeah, with gender-fluid people, perhaps. And the only way that would be determined is by the way what they were wearing for the day, if they decided to wear a dress for that day. Why should
everyone in society have to conform to whatever you decide? And even if you decide that you're a girl but you're actually a boy, there's no objective way that this makes sense. Words have to mean something. Otherwise, what's the point of having them? If you are a man who identifies as a woman and you decide on a day, from now on, let's say you've decided it permanently, now I'm going to be a girl from here on in, right? What does it mean to be a girl then? What is that? Do you see what I mean? If that's what you are, define it for me. Don't say, well, because this is the only argument you ever get from the transgender communities. You say to them, well, so what is a woman? And they go, Well, it's when I choose to identify as that. And you're like, yeah, but what is that? You still have to have a definition of woman. Otherwise, what are you changing
yeah,
to?
Yeah.
What are you transing into if you don't even know what a woman is? There have to be certain things. Like
yeah,
a woman has these characteristics. She has this.
Yeah, I know you're right with that, I believe. Like if I want to identify as a he.
Yeah. What is he?
I need to be able to define what a he is.
Correct. This is too much for some of these people, because actually, according to this person from the Department of Basic Education, here's the definition. I'm going to read it again because this really irritates me and it matters, and clearly it's becoming an issue in society. And there's policy being made here. Trans people tell those around them what they identify as. So you could have no standards, or you could have lots of standards for determining what you are. And it's totally up to you, and everyone else just has to go along with that. You see, this robs society of definition, and it robs words of meaning, and it robs people of identity, because someone like me doesn't think very much about being a man. It's not a preoccupation of mine on a daily basis, but there are people who think about this stuff all the time. Whether you're on this side of the spectrum, on that side of the spectrum, you need to know what you're defining. I want a hot bath. Mm. Oh, no. I define hot as cold. What? Then you pour the person a cold bath, and they're like, no, I asked for a hot bath. You're like, you've got to decide. Otherwise, how are you going to get what you want in life? How are you going to do anything? Right? Anyway. Mm. So let's see what happens. But I wouldn't put it past the Department of Basic Education to fuck this up like they have everything else. Here's some good news.
I truly believe that it'll be an addition. And I know that because just 2 weekends ago, I was speaking with school kids who have unisex bathroom, but it's in addition to the male and female.
Yeah, but Leanne, who's paying for that? So now we must put aside an extra budget for every school to have an extra bathroom for unisex people when there are only 3 of these people per 1,000 in society. If that, I think it's probably like 3 per million.
No, it's probably taking an existing bathroom and just converting it.
Which is expensive.
Changing the sign on the door.
Are we doing that for what?
Changing the sign on the door.
We're doing that for 3 people in the whole school?
Changing a sign on a door, yes.
For 3 people in the whole school. We're creating a
whole...
Yes,
because those 3 people are going through hell every time they go to the toilet.
Maybe they're not. Maybe they're just saying that because it gets them attention. Maybe they're not. Who are these people? No, seriously. Show me the case. Why? If this was a story, it would be in the news. It would be all over the front
page. Let's look at Caster Semenya.
Yeah. What about Caster Semenya?
So, well, Caster Semenya has, I don't know the scientific term for it, but she has both male and female genetics.
Yeah. Rare and very odd, and people.
So let those three people have their freaking toilet.
Okay. Well, you seem very happy to decide what to do with other people's money. I'm not so sure about that. And I also think, there used to be one of these people per 10 million. Now it's become a social contagion. It's a way for people to make themselves important and interesting at school. I do believe that a lot of this is just made up on the spot. And Carsten
could be, but it's a hell of an act to follow
for the rest
of their lives.
As far as we know, Caster Semenya never had this issue at school, and she's what they call intersex, right? And she's also a multi-millionaire,
sure.
So I'm not so sure that she needs our sympathy and support this morning, or a transgender bathroom to make her feel a bit better. I'm sure she's fine. Anyway, I know you're going to argue with me about this, and that's the whole point. This argument's going on in society with everybody, so... Your opinion counts. My opinion counts. Let's see if we get any closer to the truth. I just think that policy needs to decide. You know, policy is all about kind of trying to make something work for the most people most of the time. That's what it is. The rest of it is pure conjecture. It doesn't matter as much. It's just people talking. Here's another story in the news that we need to look at. There are now 8 billion people in the world. And here's what that means for the future, says Business Tech. Do you want to hear what they say? Slowing population growth. Much of the world's population growth has come in the last century as better living standards and health advancements have extended life expectancy. Total number of people on Earth grew from just 2 billion in 1927 to 6 billion by 1998. Now we're at 8 billion.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my word.
There are signs that the surge is slowing. Annual population growth is at its slowest level since 1950. So this is already happening. And you know this because you could see people having less kids in most parts of the world, right? There are fewer babies in rich countries. The slowdown is in large part driven by wealthy countries with a costly burden of raising a child, and failing marriage rates have meant that countries from South Korea to France are facing population declines as not enough babies are born to replace the elderly. This is going to be a big problem for some of those countries going forward, because how do you pay for all the old people if there aren't enough young people working? In poorer nations, there's a baby boom. Yeah. The UN forecasts that much of the world's future population growth will be concentrated in low-income countries, with just 8 accounting for the majority of the increase. Those would be Nigeria, Ethiopia, Pakistan, India, and the Philippines, where we're going to see massive growth. And people also have to, you know, because there's so much negative stuff associated with population dynamics. But here's an interesting one. There have been apocalyptic scenarios painted in the past about a global population spike, including those popularized by the population bomb, which was written by Stanford professor Paul Ehrlich in 1968, which warned of mass starvation. That has not come to pass. We've actually got more food available to more people than ever before, despite the human population reaching 8 billion. So that's good news, right? We should be happy about that. So there are lots of things that aren't as they seem when you talk about population growth. How do you feel about 8 billion people on planet Earth, Leanne?
Feels very claustrophobic. No. I'm trying to I'm a little distracted because I'm trying to remember the name of something I watched on YouTube regarding the future of the country, I mean, of the world. And it's been put together by a bunch of scientists. And I see... Juan commented, we don't have 100 years left here of life as we know it.
Bullshit. And John, what are you talking about?
Interestingly enough, it's only in trillions of years that the Earth is predicted to die out.
You know,
and that'll be because the sun dies out first before Earth dies out.
I have to bring this up because it came up in a conversation I had over the weekend. You've got all these people running around talking about how we're destroying the Earth, and we you know, Earth is going to die, and save the environment and save the planet and all this stuff. And that is true. We are doing a huge amount of damage. But the reason people are saying save the planet is not because the planet is in any danger. Human beings are in danger. If we carry on polluting, we'll make it impossible for us to live on the planet, right? That's the truth. Mm. The planet will be fine long after humans have been wiped out by whatever happens. I mean, there's going to be something that takes us out, right? Then there'll be a new species that'll be in charge. Just like before us, there were the dinosaurs. Before that, there were probably some other forms of life, single-cell organisms, things that lived under the water. There's always been an apex species, and it hasn't always been humans. Earth is fine. You know, Earth is constantly renewing itself. There are volcanoes and earthquakes and massive global catastrophes, and Earth continues. It's only humans who have to worry about this stuff. So when people say, oh no, I'm a good person because I care about the planet, I'm like, no, you don't. You only care about the planet because of humans on the planet. So in other words, you care about you. It's not a, you know, altruistic, I care about the planet thing. It's I'm worried about my future because I've been reading apocalyptic articles and watching movies about asteroids. I don't buy it. I just don't. And if we don't let nature eventually kill us, which is part of the whole cycle, eventually we will pass away. All human beings will disappear. But if it isn't nature, we'll do it to ourselves, right? We'll blow ourselves sky high with nuclear weapons and that kind of thing. The planet will be fine. It'll take it a couple of hundred years to recover in some parts of it. But I mean, there've been, you know, Nagasaki and Hiroshima had nuclear bombs dropped on them. There are people living in those cities now. There are places in the Pacific where they've tested hydrogen bombs, where the animals are just doing fine. They might not have the lifespan that they, you know, they had before. They might develop.
That's what you were going to say, the limbs.
They might have cancers at a very early stage, but then new species will come and inhabit those places, and eventually the radiation will peter out, as it always does, and everything will be fine. The planet is going to be just fine. It doesn't need you separating your rubbish just because you make yourself feel better to sort its problems out. The planet will be fine, right? So let's not worry about that. And I also think if population goes up, what are you going to do about it? You can go around sterilizing people? Who gets to choose?
Yeah.
Who gets to choose?
Yeah.
In South Africa.
Culture has a lot to do with it as well. And yeah, that can often dictate whether a person's likely to have any children at all or a certain number.
Imagine if in South Africa you had to get a license to have children, which a lot of people talk about. Oh, you know, you need a license for a gun. You need a license to drive a car. You should have a license for children. I mean, I've even said this. Mm. But who's going to determine who gets those licenses? Which human are you going to put in charge of deciding whether you should be able to have kids or not? Is it going to be a politician? God, no. We know how well they've managed everything else we've given them, right? So imagine you put
They're already telling women what to do with their bodies in the United States, in Iran.
Well, even
many parts.
Even in, you know, even in small societies, you've got people who are deciding for other people what should and shouldn't happen. And there's no one who I would let have control over my reproductive future. I don't see why anyone should. So it's fine and good and well to say, well, we must sterilize people, but who? And who decides?
Yeah.
And you get quickly.
You can turn the argument around and say, imagine we were all forced to have at least one child.
Right. It's the same as being told that you can't have any children and the government just coming around and sterilizing you without your permission. It's bullshit. No one should have that power to decide except you. So Luando agrees with me, the planet will be fine. It will. The planet doesn't need us to decide its future. It's going to happen anyway. If we needed a license to breed, we would have a massively shrinking population. Yeah, that's true. But again, Robin, I have to ask the question, who gets to decide? Who? Imagine if it was Home Affairs, as Pumlani says. Imagine you had to go to Home Affairs and stand in a queue, and then someone who has no idea of whether the sun rises in the east or west and has, you know, they've been sitting there just kind of on their phone for the last 6 hours, hoping that the queue would die down. And then they get to you and you're like, hi, I'd like to apply for my license to have a kid, please. And they look at you and go, no, stamp their form and send you on your way.
I mean, in the news this week in Limpopo, and I battled to remember the numbers, I think there are about 14 people who've been fired because they're in the emergency medical services because they don't have the right credentials.
Right.
And there are another 40 something that are being investigated for the same thing.
Right.
Can you imagine all the false licenses going around to have children?
Yeah. I mean, it's insane. And as you say, the alternative, imagine if there was a bureau that decided you had to have a kid. At least everyone had to have at least one child. There was no excuse unless you were medically incapable of having a child, in which case you should adopt. And everyone was forced to have a kid, whether they wanted to or not. That would piss a lot of people off even more than some of the people who would be pissed off that they couldn't have a child. You look at the lengths that some people go to when they find out that they're infertile or whatever, and they spend enormous amounts of money trying to have kids, whether it's, you know, in vitro fertilization or any of that stuff. You see how desperate these people are to have children and what they won't do to have kids. And you think, shame, you know, to then leave that in the hands of a government official would just be the most terrible idea.
Oh, my word.
Terrible.
Any government in any country.
Right. There isn't a single person in politics that I would consider worthy of doing something like that for us. Okay, it is time for Markets Mondays, and we're going to cross to Dylan Bester in just a moment or two. Now, whether you're a new trader who's looking for a safe place to start, or you're an experienced trader who's looking for low spreads, multi-assets, and high tech, you will find that Markets.com suits you perfectly. A special offer to everybody who's listening this morning. If you follow the link on cliffcentral.com and you register with markets.com, it'll all be on our website. Just go to cliffcentral.com and follow the link from there. Just by doing that, you will get a 30% bonus on your deposit, which is very good Where else are you getting free money? Script, you know, it'll all pop up as like a hyperscript thing. It'll all come up as a thing that you need to click on, and you go through there, and it'll just do all the population for you. So you don't have to send an email like we used to say before. Right, Leanne? Easy peasy. So the crypto market has experienced some swings over the last period, and the bubble is about to burst, according to some people. Others say this is a fundamental crash. Still others are hugely positive about what's going on in crypto, believe it or not. So to help us understand that and a whole lot more is Dylan Bester. He joins us to give us some insight. He's a co-founder and a director at Skycastle International Investments. He's also a business partner of Markets.com, and he always enjoyed the fast-paced environment of global financial markets, and he specializes in trading across multiple assets and multiple asset classes. So Dylan, it's good to see you. How are you?
Very good, and yourself?
Awesome. Hi. Awesome. Nice to see you, man. So Dylan, I mean, I gave a very brief intro there about what's going on in crypto, for example. People are so nervous right now. You know, we had this FTX thing which happened and which is dominating the headlines. So maybe we should start there. In the crypto space, what actually happened at FTX? And maybe you can explain it better than I would be able to.
Okay, great. Yeah, I'm just going to give a very broad outline and sort of explain my rationale as to what's happened.
Sure.
There's still quite a bit that's unfolding, and I think there's going to be a bit more to come.
Right.
But in a nutshell, FTX was effectively a cryptocurrency exchange. It was listed in the Bahamas as a cryptocurrency exchange. And there's a gentleman behind all of it by the name of Sam Bankman-Fried. He set up an actual quantitative trading business a year before this FTX launched, which is only launched in 2019, so all very recent, all COVID-orientated. And this hedge fund, well, this quantitative trading strategy fund that he launched was called Alameda Research. And this research firm focused on risk-free trading, risk arbitrage. And effectively what that means is the likes of a currency or cryptocurrency exchange offers buyers, willing buyers and willing sellers, opportunity to exchange their cryptocurrency via a platform or a medium. Mm-hmm. And risk arbitrage takes advantage of that. So it allows for you to buy on one platform, sell on another platform, and make the difference. Obviously, this is quite a sophisticated strategy, and it takes a lot of sort of tech to do this.
Right.
I'm giving you this bit of background because that started in 2018. Mm-hmm. And then 1 year later, in 2019, they launched FTX. The same gentleman, Sam Bankman-Fried. And effectively what happened then is for a risk arbitrage strategy to work well, you need multiple venues or multiple platforms to use. And you can always play them off against each other. Now, with him launching his own platform, he obviously decided that he would only use that one platform, which would make his strategy sort of unusable in that instance. Mm-hmm. Which most likely led him to take directional risk and take more one-sided bets for cryptocurrency itself. And as this continued, I mean, the winter of 2021 was when effectively they started getting very long and directional in terms of Bitcoin. This was the actual hedge fund using the exchange, the one exchange FTX, to buy and sell, basically just buying. And they used this on a leveraged basis. When they say leveraged, I mean, effectively, leverage as a concept is if I have $100 and I place it on Bitcoin, I'm allowed a form of leverage on that $100. It's like a debt to asset that I'm going to acquire.
Yeah.
So I've put down $100, and in Bitcoin, I'm now able to have a position worth $1,800, which creates a lot of leverage. It's 18 times. And this is called gearing your money, effectively. So during this time, I mean, Bitcoin itself, I'm going to reference Bitcoin because it's an easy price mark. There's a lot of crypto coins out there as well, but it was around $16,700. And over this time of 6 months into March, the cryptocurrency went from $16,700 to around $60,000. Now, if you had used gearing and leverage, you effectively would have made loads of money. It would have gone all the way from $16,000 to $60,000 in the space of 6 months, and you would have been on top of the world. But on the alternative side of this, you've got that $100 would have become worth a lot more. Mm-hmm. But if that market collapsed, and we saw crypto come, as of the last, let's call it 4 weeks when everything went sort of pear-shaped. Yeah.
Yeah.
We saw crypto come down to around $16,800, $18,000. That means that there's been, I would effectively say that it's gone from 67,000 odd to 16,000, which is just a loss of value of around 75%.
Right.
So crypto has lost 75% of its value effectively as of last 4 weeks ago. That would have caused that $1,800 to be at a loss of, you would have lost $1,350. And when, now remember, you've only put down $100.
Right.
So you effectively owe somebody $1,250 because of that leverage you've used. And that's effectively the scenario that's occurred here. They've taken one-sided bets, and on the Bitcoin price losing a lot of value, it's allowed, they now need to top up their accounts. They now need to make sure that they can fund their position. And this was one of the factors that created this. They also issued their own, FTX had an FTT token that allowed them to on loan on their exchange more crypto. And that loaning of crypto then allowed guys to trade more and create more leverage. So it is a big leverage bubble. And effectively, it has burst. 75% loss of value is certainly a bursting of a bubble.
Sure.
In any sense of the word. So this only came to realization this last few weeks because the crypto price was effectively at or below the prices where they purchased it originally. They got basically margin called is the term. And this means that they now have to fund their position, that the losses would have been a market-to-market loss as well as a margin loss.
Okay, so just two quick things. First of all, I mean, leverage and gearing is something that has been used in all markets, not just in crypto. You can do this with gold. You could do it with shares and stocks. You could do it with futures, hedge trading, and all that kind of thing. So it's not unusual that this would happen. Of course, you just have to be prepared that if it doesn't go your way, you're going to owe more than you put in the first place. Is that right?
That is correct. Not in every sense of the word, when you do need to have sort of risk management tools or at least a stop loss or something that protects your capital.
Right.
Or at least once it goes up to a certain extent, you're reducing some capital that you have or some profits, and you're keeping a decent sort of balance sheet on your side. And this, I mean, if you look at the actual FTX board members, well, you have the CEO, Caroline Ellison, that, I mean, in an interview, she was saying that she basically uses elementary math and risk management tools like stop losses aren't an effective form of risk management.
Right.
Which obviously shows the lack of sort of oversight or the lack of ability to protect their clients at the end anyway. I mean, each of these exchanges will have their own set of rules, and they allow different amounts of leverage and gearing depending on their client base, and also depending on the on how much risk they want their clients to have. So, in cryptocurrency, I mean, across the board, and depending on who you're trading by, will have their own set of rules and regulations that they act on. And it's a very new industry, which is why I think there's a lot still to learn here.
All right, so let's just talk about crypto generally, because this has obviously affected the crypto markets very badly. So what does this mean to people who are still holding Bitcoin, people who are on other exchanges, people who've got Ethereum, people who have some of the other altcoins? What does that mean to them?
Look, I mean, I think it's a massive shock to confidence here. We've had an idea where you've got a cryptocurrency, and do I think the technology is valid and there's a space in the economy? Most certainly, yes. When it will come to be more widely used or used for a better purpose than speculating and trading, I think, yes, there certainly will be a value. As a case in point, I'd like to compare it to sort of like your 2001.com crash, where you had all these new tech businesses that started up, and there was also lots of money going around. So in the environment we were in over the last 2 years in COVID, you had the likes of stimulus in the market. You had people getting free checks in America every month, sitting at home.
Right.
So they took up sort of daytime jobs and became traders, which allowed them to obviously go into all these altcoins and create new altcoins. And so in my view there, it's a new industry that's up and coming. And all that dot-com bubble needed was a bit of regulation and a bit of, I mean, effectively at the end of the day, you want to protect your clients and you want to protect your customers to make sure that they're always going to be around. You don't want it blowing up like we've seen here. So in terms of crypto as a whole, I do think there's a place for it. I think some people take it less seriously than others, launching their own altcoins and that. But as a whole, there's definitely a space for it, and it just needs a bit more regulation, a bit more oversight to bring that confidence back. To know that a company like FTX or Alameda Research can't just dip into their client deposits that mm-hmm. aren't supposed to be trading or being a managed solution and take it for their hedge fund where they have a discretionary mandate. So it would be interesting to see what type of mandates they would have entered into their clients with and what protection their clients had, what guarantees they gave their client, if any. And that's still to unfold, which is why I don't think this is the end of it, but it has caused a lot of concern around the Bitcoin price,
right,
what Bitcoin's worth. And it's generally now at this time where you've got a lot of people that need to have confidence against in the industry, and they need to then start getting that through regulation, certainly, and mass adoption.
Okay, I want to quickly move on to some other things, because there's a lot that I want to tap into while we've got you. What do you see happening to the Rand? Because we've seen it strengthen over the last few weeks. Where do you think the Rand is going to go looking forward from here? And which currencies are you most nervous about?
First of all, I'm nervous of the dollar, okay. Just because the dollar is generally strong now. They've got basically rising interest rates in the US. The rest of the world's trying to copy them. So everyone is effectively looking to position their money out of sort of, let's call it the equity market, and move into more of a dollar position. So the dollars are basically being held quite closely and invested in the US, mm-hmm. which is our main competitor to our Rand at the moment, because everyone wants, there's a massive demand for dollars.
Right.
South Africa, I definitely see a stronger Rand on the horizon. We've got a very good trade balance, a very good trade surplus at the moment. We've just been upgraded on Friday from S&P Global to actually a positive outlook. So there's quite a few positive factors for South Africa. We'll continue to raise interest rates to follow the Federal Reserve. We're only getting to sort of pre-COVID interest rates now. At our next meeting for the MPC, we'll probably get there. And this will keep the Rand competitive. Our local bond market and our high-yield bond market is one of the most attractive in the world at the moment. And there's massive opportunities in our bonds, which generally will attract investors into our Rand currency.
All right, that's interesting, because I remember whenever we would talk about the ratings, you know, the various kind of what grade rating we were, it used to be a huge story. Now when we go up, it doesn't seem to make the headlines, but whenever we came down, it was like the biggest news story ever. What's changed there?
I mean, yeah, definitely. I think we've also got what's changed is it's been we haven't had a positive outlook for quite a while. It's been downgraded.
Okay.
I wouldn't say much has changed from a political standpoint, but from a trade balance and a surplus point of view, our tax revenue collection is at its highest we've ever seen. Mm-hmm. Our exports are at its highest we've ever seen. So we're starting to actually make money. And in that scenario, I mean, we don't have much to GDP. So South Africa as a country hasn't extended our balance sheet to a point where we have to fund a surplus like what's happened in the US. Well, fund a balance sheet like what's happening in the US and pretty much the rest of Europe. So we're in a very positive position. We're an emerging market. There's a lot of growth potential in South Africa. So it is actually quite a positive outlook in terms of the general country as a whole. Yes, there are little pockets of instability, but as a whole, it's looking pretty good. It's good to see that we're generating revenue. And we've That's also great. Now started with our own sort of form of stimulus in the country, which is our grant package, where we're starting to allow the low-income earners to get more. And that effectively is going to be a result of economic activity, because that's going to be spent once again. So it's going to create a bit of it's like a snowball effect.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's generally quite positive for the Rand. And the only problem to that is a stronger dollar.
Okay.
But that can't last forever. It's been very strong for a while, for at least 2.5-3 years. So I think that might fade sort of mid-next year.
Okay, I like it. Well, thanks for filling us in on those. Is there anything else that you're excited about when it comes to investment at the moment? Because let's face it, there are a lot of people who are looking at all of this going, uh-oh, I just don't know where to put my money. What's safe anymore? And people run to things like gold or government bonds. What would you say are the safest bets you can make in a market like this?
So I think the last time we spoke, I did mention that gold, I like gold at that time. It was sitting around $1,640. It's $100 high now. It's $1,740. Mm-hmm. I still like gold. I think we can be a bit higher. Okay. Just given the backdrop of what's going on and the uncertainty, you want something safe like gold. In terms of the market, from an overall perspective, I wouldn't want to take much risk in the equity market unless it was short term.
Okay.
Just there's a lot of economic changes and a lot of higher interest rates and higher inflation is not a great place to be investing in equities and across the board. So I'd certainly focus on bonds and a bit of gold as a very safe conservative outlook for now.
Good.
You might not get the returns you want, but at least you know you'll have a bit of safety of your capital over time.
Right. And I mean, that's about as close as you're going to get to like straight up advice as is possible to dispense with. Of course, you have to make your own decisions. And this does not constitute financial advice. This is all just useful information that you could put into your own machine and determine the way forward. But thank you so much, Dylan Bester from Skycastle International Investments and a business partner of Markets.com for a little look at what's been going on, especially with the crypto space recently. Markets Monday is brought to you by Markets.com. They will be taking a little bit of a break and will be back on the show again in January. Remember to follow the link on cliffcentral.com. In the meantime, to register with Markets.com, you will get a 30% bonus on your deposit. And follow them on Markets.com. On all their different social media. You can find them on MarketsComSA is basically their tag. You can find them on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube. All of that and a whole lot more. All right, Leanne Moll, nice to have you on. And thank you very much for making Monday fascinating for us with all sorts of charts about which drugs stay in your system the longest, how much you can get for a liver, which places are most sore for tattoos. You would never hear any of this if you weren't on the show with us, right?
You'd never know.
You never know. Not only do we get like brilliant people on who can tell us about cryptocurrencies and what's been happening with FTX, but we also get all the useful information, the questions that you've always wanted answered. That's kind of what we try to do.
There you go.
All right, everyone.
Very good.
Have a happy Monday. We will see you tomorrow. Cheers, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye. CliffCentral.com.